We have Dr. Dale Manblex come up and present to you the new cross-breed EPD adjustment factors. Dr. Manblex is not able to join us this year. He'll be retiring later this summer. And we really appreciate all the work that he's done over the years in completing these cross-breed adjustment factors. But I want to introduce to you Dr. Larry Keene, who is a relatively new member of the staff at the USPM Research Center. And he has agreed to undertake this process of computing the cross-breed EPD adjustment factors. We're really excited to have him here and to have him taking on that role.
Thank you, Mark. One thing I want to say, and I'll let the FOC handle the whole proceeding. Before we go too far, if anybody wants to know some extra information here, we found out at the meeting on page 95 in your proceeding. There's a chart on the average EPD that's just been reported by the committee every year about their attendance in general. And ABDA, Brahmin Association, does have carcass trait EPDs, and I do have the means for those carcass trait EPDs. I'll read those off really quickly to me, and feel free to stop me anytime, and I can give them to you later if you don't have anything right now. Just so you have it, though, carcass weight average is 4.2 pounds. Retail product percentage is 0.02. Marlin score is minus 0.01. Ribeye area is 0.07. Fat thickness is minus 0.003. And they also have a tenderness EPD, Warner Brassler shear force, is minus 0.003. And like I said, if anybody wants that information in more detail, I'm happy to give that to you later. With that, as Mark said, it's an honor to work with Dale on this, to take this. And as you all know, this has been going on here for quite a while with BIS. Cross-breed EPDs have been presented here at BIS, I think, for the last 14 years, since 1993. When the inaugural run came, and I think we've all seen the evolution of this process as we've gone on, and some growing pains and some stabilization here, I think, in the last 5 or 6 years. Just background for those of you that aren't aware, I'm sure a lot of you are already, but EPDs are formulated in order to account for differences in the EPD base and the genetic evaluations of each breed. As we know, breeds, and we've talked about here with the multi-breeds, breeds do not have the same base to their EPDs, and the EPDs are not always on the same scale. We don't have a way to directly compare them. What these cross-breed adjustment factors are to you is to correct for that difference in the base between the breeds. Okay? And this data to compare these EPDs to each other across breeds has come from U.S. MARC data, the Germplasm Evaluation Program, gone over through 8 cycles by Larry Cundiff primarily, and we're continuing on that with his retirement right now with Mark Coleman in charge of that. So I just want to go into some background. I know Dale's presented this quite a number of times, and we do have one change in the calculations here. I'm going to highlight it, but I just want to give you some background on how these EPDs are calculated as best I can. Basically, we need to find a way to look at breed differences and take those breed differences back to help us solve for why breeds are different from each other in their bases on EPDs, in whatever their base is, whatever zero is for that breed. So, first of all, we need to find breed aspire solutions to see how much these breeds are different from each other. And that comes from our GT data, as I already said. And we sample sires from different participating breeds. Some of you at the breed associations, some of you producers know that quite well, that the process we've gone through to get that through the GT cycles. All crosses are then adjusted to full heterosis, and then used to get breed-sire differences. What I mean by adjusted to full heterosis, Throughout all of these cycles, we've had Herbert and Angus data mated, or bulls mated with Herbert and Angus cows, for instance. Also the cows of a composite that happens to be a quarter Angus, a quarter Herbert. And those animals are not allowed to express the full amount of heterosis they would if they were mated to some breed that they weren't related to. So we adjust back to full heterosis, sort of a pre-adjustment right now, and then solve for these breed differences in this U.S. mark data. After that, we just contact the breed associations. I contacted several of you this year in order to get the ETD of all the sires that have been used for these breeds so that we know what our mean is essentially relative to the industry based on what the ETDs of those sires we've been using in ETD are, and to get the ETD of the most recent fully born calf crop, the 2005 born animal from the breed association. So what is the average ETD for a calf born in 2005? And these then are used to scale the differences that we see at our U.S. mark ETD data to ETD reported in 2005. Okay? So it's just find the differences and adjust it back to a phase. That's sort of the process. This is where a change comes in this year that we got from, actually Mark saw from looking at presenting to another producer group, I think, that is a little bit different than what we've done in the past when we looked at adjusting these ETDs back and trying to find these crossbreed factors. Basically, we need to adjust the U.S. mark breed solutions, the sire differences, to that year 2005. In order to do that in the past, we use this equation right here, okay? So this right here is the difference that we get in the GP data for how much different an Angus is from a Hereford, for instance. Okay, so this would be, say, the Hereford breed solution. And then after that, we've taken what is the average of ETD for animals born in 2005 for this year, minus the average of the sires that we used as sampled in the GP cycles at U.S. Mark, multiplied that by a regression coefficient, a scaling factor, because our differences may not be the same as the differences that are in the industry. Okay? That's what that scaling factor is. Yeah, it's a regression of U.S. Mark phenotypes on ETDs of the sires that produce those animals. And that's, so basically it's scaling so that this difference goes on to the U.S. mark scale. Okay? Difference this year, instead of multiplying by that scaling factor, we've divided that whole equation by that scaling factor. Okay? Now I'll go on to my next slide to say why here. Okay, so why are we making this change at all? Why does it matter? Well, the original method here adjusted this U.S. mark bull breed differences that we predicted to the U.S. mark scale. But if these cross-breed adjustment factors are going to be used in the industry, what scale do we want them? Okay, we want them on the industry scale, on the scale that the EPDs are in, right? So instead of doing that, we take our U.S. mark solutions and adjust them to the best estimate of the scale we have of what the industry is instead. That's what's going on here. This creates a little bit of a difference in what we had previous estimates for these crossbreed factors and for breed of sire differences, as we show later in these tables. So there's going to be some changes here that you'll see, but you know, it doesn't shake things up too much. This new method is adjusting back to an industry scale, as I said. So just a little background on those regressions and what those really are. We're taking, as I said, the performance we have in progeny at U.S. mark and regressing that on the ETD of the sires that produce those animals. And the expectation for those in general for birth weight, mean weight, and yearly weight is 1. Okay, that's what we want. We want our differences at U.S. mark to be the same as the differences in the industry. And 0.5 for the grand progeny of a sire. That's the direct value of that sire, 2 generations down, and 1 for the milk of his daughters, right? And as you can see here, really, these aren't too far off. I know in the past these have been a little further off. They're getting closer to 1, I think, most years that these things get run, and are actually kind of converging to these values right here. Okay? I know several of you have seen this before. Basically, we're pretty satisfied with where this is at. I'm happy to discuss some of the reasons why we think these might be different, but I don't want to take up too much time with that. Okay, so what's the effect of this new method on the breed differences that we predict and on the cross-breed EPD adjustment factors that result? Okay, so this is the new method, remember, with the scaling factor being applied to the U.S. Mark breed solution. For weaning weight, where that regression was less than 1, the breed differences that we see at U.S. Mark are now widened. Okay, we're dividing by something smaller than 1, that means that we get bigger spread. Okay, for everything else, actually the breed differences are narrowed just a bit because we're over 1 for all of those. Okay, we'll see the effect of that a little bit here as I show the results. Just go on a little bit more with the background on the calculations. That's how we get to how the breeds are different as of 2005, is based on the equation we've shown already. This next equation is taking your U.S. Mark adjustment and adjusting it to some constant breed base based on that breed differences we just calculated. And the cases we've always done, we use Angus as the standard for that. And subtracting that from the difference between the mean EPD in 2005, those two breeds. Okay. All of these now are on an industry scale. This is where that step yeah, comes in and is really important. Okay, before these would have been on the U.S. Mark scale. And then use these adjustment factors. Producers are able to use these for any commercial crossbreeding program they'd like to use in order to compare bulls for different breeds by adding the table factor we just calculated to the EPD of the breeds based on the breed's own genetic evaluation. Okay. With that, I want to just talk about a few other changes that would cause a little bit of difference in these analyses this year. Most of them are fairly minor. There's some slight changes to bull EPD averages based on the breed, the EPDs of the bulls that we sampled, and the breed means. That happens most years a little bit, and most of that's pretty small. There's been more birth weight, mean weight, and yearling weight records added to our data set from Cycle 7, Erfurt Angus, Simmental Limousin, Charlotte Gilby, Red Angus. And also then for the milk, for the maternal weaning weight records, we've got a few more records from Cycle 7 and Cycle 8 right here, including Beef Master and Brangus. Okay. Erfurt Angus have a little bit more because they're in both of those cycles. Differences then from 2006 represent the change in methodology as well as these little differences right here that I've just talked about from more data for the most part. Angus, just looking at it, comparing Angus to the other breeds, Angus is lighter than the other breeds, it has been in the past for the most part. Most of the changes are pretty minor even with the new methodology and birth weight. For weaning weight, Angus has increased in weaning weight difference versus most of the other breeds. And for yearling weight, Angus generally decreased slightly. This is that shrinkage and widening I was talking about in the new methodology versus most of the breeds that are still heavier in general. Okay. Here's a look at the progeny numbers we have. I won't spend much time on this. Just know that for the most part, obviously the biggest number of records we have in terms of both progeny and grand progeny is in Herper Angus because they've been involved in all cycles. And some of these now, some of the breeds that we've used in our cycle 7, as I said before, are getting pretty large relatively in our data set. Some of the other breeds aren't as large right now, and the estimates aren't necessarily as good for them right now as a result. That'll change as we sample breeds in our continuing GPD cycles. So here's the results, looking at the comparison between breeds on birth weight. Last year, remember this is the methodology, this is what Larry, I think, reported last year. BIS versus this year. And for the most part, I'm sure for me as the person looking at this, these don't seem too big. Some others of you may argue with that a little bit, and I'm open to that. But these seem pretty similar for the most part, I think. Okay. Anyway, remember I said that Angus, this is where we probably widened a little bit because our regression estimate, that scaling factor, was a little bit less than 1 instead of greater than 1. That was a 0.87. And here we had some widening in the differences, you know, instead of narrowing for all of the breeds versus Angus as the 0 here. And you see that a little bit. The ones that were a little bit higher probably in general spread a little bit further away. If they didn't, it's usually because of differences in EPD means. And the ones that were more negative are generally just a little bit further negative than they were before. New data has changed this a little bit for the breeds I mentioned that have a few more records. In general, these have changed a bit. But I think this is a more exact representation than what we had before. Yearling weight, again, as I said here, we've scaled and now differences are actually a little bit closer. We've narrowed the gap a little bit due to this new methodology. And again, I believe this is closer to what we should be having out of this. In general, breeds that were positive, there weren't many, are less positive than before, and in general, breeds that were negative are less negative than before. And if there are changes where that's violated, it's because of differences in progeny means that we've gotten from data in general, in this case for yearling weight. Okay, give you some time to soak that in. We have had some drops, and I'm going to show you a slide here in the next, and right after this, that's going to show where some of these are. But, feel free to stop me anytime for questions. Okay, the last one, looking at milk, and in general, I think milk is pretty close to how it was before. The methodology hasn't changed it as much. There haven't been as many new records added here as a proportion, and most of these are fairly close to what they were before. Okay, a little bit of change for a few breeds here, relative to Angus. This is an interesting slide. Actually, this is Larry Cundiff's idea. He sent it. He had presented something like this in New Zealand. I'm showing this right now only for 7 breeds because it's easier to fit, and these are the 7 breeds that we've had most recently in cycle 7, the 7 highest used breeds, I believe. And what this is taking the adjustment factors, which I haven't shown the table of yet, but they're based on those breed differences I just showed, and the genetic trend reported based on the evaluation of those breeds, adding your adjustment factor to that to try to put them nearly on the same scale on the genetic trends. Okay? What I think this does, and birth weight maybe the least because we kind of understand the differences there pretty well, I think this explains why we have some of the differences we see in these crossbreed factors right now, because of differences in selection pressure. As you can see, growth became a priority in several of our breeds that have been doing genetic evaluations for a long time. We had an increase in birth weight, and then all of them started to level off. Not unexpected at all. I don't think that's surprising anybody. Okay. The continental breeds up here mostly started with a higher birth weight and have generally selected downward to try to control that. I don't think this surprises us with these trends, but it shows us, if we look at it on the crossbreed factors, what the differences are in the birth weights and where they've been in the trends throughout this period, from 68 to 2004. Okay. The next ones, I think, are more interesting, actually, for the other traits. This is weaning weight, okay? And what we start to notice here, because I know a lot of people have asked why Angus has stayed, in general, has become more positive over time relative to other breeds when we're all selecting for these things. What we start to see here is a difference in the selection pressure that's been obtained in Angus versus some of these other breeds. Okay, the slope is different. And I think that's fairly clear here. It'll be even more clear on the next slide. And so, and I think this is understandable for what we've seen in the industry with what these breeds have done. Okay? If any of this surprises anybody, let me know. I'm glad to talk about it anytime here. Okay? For yearling weight, looking again at these breed differences, this is again where I think we see quite a large change in what we have. Look at the slope of the Angus Lion since the 1980s versus the slope of the other breeds. If we ask why some of the differences have accumulated where we didn't see differences early in the cross-breeding breeding program. And the slope is definitely a higher scale than the other breeds in this case. Okay. And in fact, they're actually catching Sanitol now, who's selected downward for a mature size, I believe. Okay. And the last one is on milk, then general upward selection pressure for milk other than breeds that would say the cattle on it. Sorry.
Did I get it mixed up?
I apologize for that. Sorry. I'm thinking in milk and yearling weight orders from what I showed before, and I think I got two slides mixed up. So the one before was milk, and we saw Angus had caught up to Simmental milk. We're also seeing they're really catching up to Simmental in terms of yearling weight. So I apologize for that. And I passed my slide before I was like, but I think we got the idea about the slopes being different in terms of selection pressure on these and why we see some of the differences we see in these breeds right now. The last slide, this is in your book. I'm not going to spend too much time on these. These are the adjustment factors, though, themselves. This is what you add to the breeds in order to compare them on different EPD evaluations. Okay? Can someone press the back space there? Sorry about that. So if we take, for example, that the breed EPD for Angus, Simmental, and Red Angus for just bold picked at random right here, we would add that adjustment factor from the table to each of those, 0 for Angus, 5.7 for Simmental, and 2.5 for Red Angus. And this would be the across breed EPD of all three of those bulls. And would be the best comparison we have between those bulls if you were trying to choose which one you wanted to use for your breeding program. Again, I'm not going to spend too much time on these. This is the next step for weaning weight. I'm glad to talk about these more one-on-one with anybody, but I don't think just going over each number and saying it to everybody has a whole lot here. You've got them on your book. Okay. Got some changes here. Generally, it's mean EPD changes if it's anything different than what we showed for the breed differences. Again, here's yearling weight. Okay. Again, some changes here. Generally, if they're different than the breed, just because of mean EPD differences. Same thing for milk. Okay. This is another kind of slide, actually, that he sent from New Zealand. So he's still with us to help us out quite a bit, as you can see. And here at BIF for this 40th anniversary in some form. So with our new methodology, we have some, and you'll even see it in your table, some things where the weights actually in terms of scale seem a little strange, may seem a little bit off. Larry's idea was actually to take the 2005 mean reported on the Angus website, since there's a base at 0, and add that to each of these other breeds in terms of their cross-breed adjustment factor in order to look at what the differences in the breeds are right now. Sorry, not the cross-breed adjustment factor, the breed difference, in order to look at sort of on a scale we all understand how much different the breeds are from each other right now if we were mating them some random unrelated breed. And you can see, really, we see differences that seem pretty substantial, but for the most part, these are in ranges, I think, that we might expect, and not too surprising. Okay? Yeah. Okay. Okay, all right. Yeah. So, So, you know, take Angus, for instance, the 480, the 80-pound first wave. This is adding the three difference to that 80 pounds to give this on a scale that makes some sense. And these slides, if anybody wants to see them, will be on the BIF conference website later to look at this a little bit more. With that, I'll take any questions. I have another bit I want to present about the carcass. Is Dr. Dyke in here anymore? To answer his question that he asked earlier. Maybe not. Anyway, I have a little bit more to present, but I'll take any questions on that.
Does this one go back or down?
You got it.
Okay. This really is a lot better than children worrying about or something. The real three difference compared to the one we've been using for the last 10 years. The one that's previous.
Yeah, I agree.
You really is a lot better. I'm not sure if you're being credited for it because I did take into account the Angus average speed on your old age, and another one might be 30. And if you look at that, they'd say, wow, 30 pounds better than Angus.
Yeah.
I think we're really.
Yeah, it's a scale thing. I think it helps.
This is real proof.
And Larry kind of too. A lot of problem. Thank you. Any other questions about this section right now? Okay, I'm going to go on and talk just a little bit about the carcass data right now. I'm going to skip through some. Whoops. I'm sorry. There we go. All right. So Dale presented something like this. I'm going to do something very similar here to what he's presented, but I think we have some optimistic looks at cross-breeding species for carcass traits at the end of this. And so I'll try to go through this, and we're getting kind of close on time. We're not doing too bad. I think we're okay yet. So.